You're all ready for this. The Bell and Pollock Legal Show, the only show of its kind. Gary Bell, Brad Pollock. We are injury attorneys, but we're here for you on this show to answer your questions, solve your problems on any legal subject. Telephone number 303-713-8255. That's 303-713-8255. You can call us. We'll answer your questions, solve your problems. We do it every week. Don't forget about our website, championsofthepeople.com. All of our 6 books are there for you. They're free. You can download an e-copy free. Our most recent book, The Essential Guideline to Colorado Car Insurance, questions that you had about insurance. That book is valuable. It's informative. It has picture examples, narrative explanations for you. It gives you sample deck sheets, gives you arrows pointing out what the most important parts are. And if you have any questions, you can call us at our law firm, people, or you can call us right now. People call us almost every week asking us questions just on insurance coverage. We're glad to answer the questions. Okay, today we thought we'd delve into a little bit about the legality and the legal arguments in this Colorado case before the United States Supreme Court involving the Masterpiece Cake Shop. And so what are the legal arguments? This is a legal show, not a political show, so we're going to delve into what are the legal arguments, where do they come from, why do they exist, and what are the arguments? And in that case, it's a big case, as everyone knows. I think people don't understand what friends of the court briefs are. And so there were, I think, 60 or more friends of the court briefs. And so when you have a huge issue, any case, Colorado Supreme Court, California Supreme Court, United States Supreme Court, you can petition as friends of the court to file a brief so that your view, even though you're not a party to the litigation, can be held. So that's one point. And so it's a big issue. About 60 friends of the court briefs have been filed in that case. So everybody knows about the case, and everybody knows about the First Amendment, freedom of religion. And so that's one of the derivatives of the one side of the case. The other side of the case, Brad, involves the Colorado Anti-Discrimination Act. And let's explore that law a little bit so everybody will understand what we're talking about.
Well, that law, also known as CADA, C-A-D-A, prohibits places of public accommodation from discriminating based on, among other things, sexual orientation. And, of course, the claim here is that there was discrimination based on sexual orientation. And so you have a clash of the Colorado Anti-Discrimination Act and the prohibition from discriminating against sexual orientation up against freedom of expression, the First Amendment rights of and freedom to exercise your religion and your free speech, and which the Masterpiece Cake Bakery has claimed that they have that freedom, and therefore, because that's their cakes are masterpieces and they are a form of expression, a form of speech, they therefore have no responsibility, and they do have the right to select and choose for whom they'll make a cake on what subject.
Right. Well, you know, the public accommodation and the Colorado Anti-Discrimination Act talks about public accommodation places, and that means, the definition is, it means any place of business, that offers wholesale or retail sales. There's other parts of the definition that are not applicable. Any place of business that offers hotels, wholesale sales, retail sales, so then it applies to that business. So this was a retail sale. So that's how the statute became triggered, because they were offering for a retail sale for cakes. And so the Colorado Anti-Discrimination Act was triggered to cover that particular transaction. So then this is a classic constitutional setup, a classic one. You have the United States Constitution, First Amendment, freedom of religion, versus a state statute that says you cannot discriminate based upon sexual orientation. And so which one wins? How do you determine which one wins? And so many times you look at the legislative history. The courts look at the legislative history to determine what was written. Some, as you know, United States Supreme Court justices say we're going to read just the letter of the law. And that pleases some, makes other people mad. Some United States Supreme Court justices say we're going to interpret the statute, and that makes some people mad, and so you should read the black letter law. And so, you know, on this one, Brad, they argue that the Colorado Anti-Discrimination Act And they can't violate the First Amendment. The First Amendment trumps, they say, the alleged discrimination.
Right. And the first thing you have to get is the making of the cake a form of free speech and a form of expression? And that's one of the things that is being argued is, do you even get to that level of protection by the First Amendment based on what the person makes as a cake? And you know, can you bring religion into your business? Can you, you know, Masterpiece Cake was known to close on Sundays. It had refused to allow or refused to make other cakes in other forms, not just as it related to sexual orientation. And because it had refused to do those, Masterpiece Cake, the person is a very devout Catholic, was saying he refused to make the cake. And so what we're looking at is a situation of how do these two clash and where do you start bringing religion into what you're doing? And is religion a part of making a cake? And is expression and free speech a part of making a cake? And of course, Masterpiece Cake says that they're doing exactly that. They're giving a form of expression and they're saying things with their cakes, and therefore they're not required to say things that are against their religion.
I think one of the fascinating arguments, legal arguments in this case, is that the one side that wants to exercise free religion under the First Amendment, the Masterpiece Cake attorneys and their side, concede that generally it's okay to regulate discrimination in providing goods and services. Generally, that's okay, is the argument. But in this case, they say it's not okay because the state of Colorado does not have, and these are the key words, a sufficiently strong governmental interest in regulating this behavior, this conduct, this expression. And so that's the matchup. If you were on the United States Supreme Court, you're looking at the First Amendment that says you have the freedom of religion, and we everybody talks about it, freedom of speech, freedom of religion, and then you have the Colorado Anti-Discrimination Act that was passed to prohibit in the wholesale sales and retail sales of products or services discrimination based upon sexual orientation. And so on the face of it, that's the dilemma. And these are fascinating legal arguments. It's a classic constitutional law setup. And we've said before on the show, Brad, you can have an ordinance in Oregon. You can have an ordinance in Texas that says you can't do something. A little town can have an ordinance. And then that can be alleged that violates an amendment to the United States Constitution, maybe the Fourth Amendment, maybe the First Amendment. And then that sets up the classic constitutional argument.
Well, sure, it's dividing lines. And I misspoke a little bit. Mr. Phillips, who is the owner of Masterpiece Cake, is a devout Christian. I can't say he's Catholic. I don't know what denomination he is. But it's his Christian beliefs that kept him from making the cake. But it's like I said, the first question you have to delve into, and when you have 60 briefs from Friends of the Court.
Right.
And so people know Friends of the Court are people who say we have a legitimate interest and we want to give our statement and our perspective to the court as a friend of the court. No, we're not actually in the case. No, we're not actually a party in the case. But what we are is we're a friend of the court and we want to explain our position and give the court a perspective. One of the beginning parts of this is making a cake. Is that come within the First Amendment? Right. Is that a religious act? Is that an act of expression, a speech? No, not just an act of expression for a little group. Is it a speech that is protected or a form of communication that's protected under the First Amendment? That's going to be a big question, I think, a threshold question.
Right. And the other thing I think a lot of people understand, even you take the Colorado Supreme Court here, if they're going to decide, for example, in our area, when there's a big change or a decision going to be made on maybe an insurance policy, a car insurance policy, is this void or is this enforceable, this provision right here? Well, people petition, the defense lawyers petition the Supreme Court to make their position known. The plaintiff's lawyers petition the Supreme Court to make their positions known. And then it's discretionary by the court if they're going to accept Friends of the Court brief, a fascinating legal concept. And in this case, in the United States Supreme Court, there are a lot of briefs. Okay, you can give us a call, 303-713-8255. That's 713-8255, the Bell and Pollock Legal Show. Don't forget about our injury show, 10 o'clock every Saturday morning for 1 hour on KOA, 850 a.m. And we're going to talk about what we're going to show you there in the show coming up. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Bell and Pollock Legal Show. Gary Bell, Brad Pollock, we're here for you. 303-713-8255. We're going to answer your questions on any legal subject. Doesn't matter if it's estates, landlord-tenant, wills, divorce, custody, eviction, land disputes. We've been doing it for years, and we're glad to do it. And if we can't get you the answer, we'll get you to the right referrals who will get you the answer, and we'll refer you out. And we don't get paid to refer you out. We just do it so that you get to the right place to get answers to your questions. 303-713-8255. Right before the break, we were talking about the Masterpiece Cake case before the United States Supreme Court. And just to add one more bit of history, legal history to this situation, the landmark case in this country called Marbury versus Madison, everybody that goes to law school will study this case. But it, how does that relate to this United States Supreme Court? Marbury versus Madison was the decision in which allowed the United States Supreme Court to exercise judicial review and was under Article 3 of the Constitution. So it didn't always exist the way it exists right now. And so case precedent takes a big part in all of these cases. What is freedom of expression? What is freedom of religion? And how do state statutes vie up in verses against the United States Constitution? Right now we're going to talk to Joe about a homeowners association question. Good morning, Joe.
Good morning, sir.
What can we do for you?
I have some really large oversized trees in my townhouse community, and I've asked the HOA to remove them, and I'm willing to pay for it. And they're pretty reactive. I mean, they basically have to be almost fall in your house before they'll do anything. And I just wondered what options I might have.
Okay, so these large trees, just describe them for me. Are they encroaching on property? Do they block something? Do they touch roofs? Do they affect the property? Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, there's a large cottonwood. It's about 60 foot in the backyard.
Right.
When the branches don't get cut back, they're overhanging the bedrooms. There's no room for the roots to expand where they come towards the house.
Right.
Basically, the root system can't go any further. And they're probably about 40 years old.
Do we have a lot of them, a few of them?
Just two, one in the front and one in the back.
Okay, what does the HOA say to you when you...
They have an arborist come out every so often and look. And unless it's, ready to fall in the house, they're probably not going to,
Do anything about it.
But I said I would even pay for it, which is probably like $4,000, but I would rather do that than have it fall.
Right. You're talking about a lot of money to remove trees.
Absolutely, yeah.
So,
yes, sir.
Obviously, you've gone to the homeowners meetings, and you've gone and talked to them and told them what you want to have done, right?
Well, I've gone to their meetings, but I've done this through an email, but I have gone to meetings on other subjects. So I have attended them, so I kind of know a little bit about the meetings.
Well, what I'm trying to find out is, this gone to the? Is it just with the management company right now, or has it actually gone to the board, the HOA board?
It's going to go to the board, I think, later this month.
Okay, and with respect to, have you taken a look at the bylaws, rules, regulations, the covenants of the association to determine under what rights you have to address the board and also to express your position and get changes made?
That I'm going to probably have to do a little bit of research and find those rules to go through them. So I probably do that in the next 2 weeks here.
Right.
But what do they say to you? What's their answer? You sent an email. Did they give you a written answer back?
No, I talked to them on the phone, and they said the arborist hasn't given us an emergency phone call that anything needs to be done right now, but they're going to submit the writings for the properties they evaluated of what the arborist's recommendations are or aren't in the next 2 weeks.
Do you know what those recommendations are, the arborist?
They said they would announce them at the January meeting later this month.
See, and that's very bad, because not knowing in advance gives you no opportunity to see if there's an arborist who won't agree. I mean, when you don't know, arborists can have difference of opinions too. And, the first place I think I would start with this is the people directly affected by the trees. I'm not taking a position one way or the other as whether the trees should come down or stay up, because I'm not out there.
Sure.
But you've got the people who are living there, and you were talking about how the trees are adversely affecting certain parts of the associate of the common areas and certain parts of even the townhomes that people are living in. And so when people are living there, they have to be able to make a statement as to whether or not this tree is causing problems and what their position is.
Okay.
You obviously are being directly affected by that tree or by those trees, and that's why I think you want them down and you feel they can be a danger. The second step is like I said, knowing what the arborist says. So, you know, if they're not going to announce it until at the association meeting, you might want to start almost immediately saying, well, wait a minute, then a final vote shouldn't be made at that meeting until I have a chance to see if I want a different arborist to come out and see what they might say.
I would send them an email, Joe, and I would ask them to provide you a copy of the report and the opinion in advance of the meeting, period, number one.
Okay.
Okay, period. Just do that.
Okay.
And this, I always like to break questions and issues down into simple components. Component number one, if this tree, these two trees were an eyesore, then, you know, there's an argument. I mean, if they're half dead, they don't get a cut, they don't maintain them, et cetera, that's one argument. And there's no question, Joe, that these trees are on the common areas, right? Is there a question?
I think the way it is, I think it's considered my property. The backyard is considered my property, and the front yard is considered my property.
Okay, well, that's a huge issue, okay? Because in the common areas is one thing, but your private property is another. But, I mean, they still have the rights to regulate certain matters on your private property.
Okay.
And Brad was right in the beginning. You need to delve into the covenants to see what provisions are for maintaining landscaping and trees.
Yeah, have you had a chance to look at those?
No, I'm going to have to do a little bit of research because I think they mailed them out when I moved in, which was a few years ago, so I have to find that packet. And...
Right, but if you contact, when's the hearing?
It's the third week of January.
Third week of January. You may not be able to get all this done. That's why you may want to table it. And as we said, one of the reasons is you don't know what the arborist is saying. But I think it's very important. If these trees are on your property, then obviously that's a different situation as far as what you can do. It may or may not be. But if you just call up the association, the management company, tell them you want copies of the bylaws, covenants, decks, rules and regulations, all that, they probably will give you copies.
Okay.
For sure they'll let you come look at them wherever they may be. And if you want copies, there's a strong chance that if they already have them on the internet or on the computer, they're just going to send them to you. If they don't have them on there, they're going to charge you a copy fee.
Okay.
But you need those to begin with. And ask them to zero in on landscaping. Ask them to zero in on the trees. Ask them to zero in on what you can and can't do. Because, you know, I'm not so sure if these things are on your property that you can't just cut them down. You know, every association has requirements that you can't make changes to the exterior part of the townhomes that you live in without their authority, because they want the uniformity and they want to make sure it still looks good and they want to make sure it's done right. But I'm not so sure that you don't have an extra word in this in light of the fact that these trees are on your property.
Well, here's what I think you do, Joe. You send them an email and you demand a copy of the arborist report. In the email, you ask them to explain their position. This is what I do to insurance companies. You give me the position, your position in writing as to how you have the right to decide this one way or the other under the covenants. You ask them that question, okay?
Okay.
Then in the background, you're going to research the covenants and conditions yourself. Now, what doesn't work, everybody listen to this, what doesn't work with HOAs is you go in there and say, I don't like this. I don't like these trees. Remove them. That doesn't work. What does work is you come in and you prove that there's several neighbors that don't want them there. Here's their statements or affidavits. What does work is you funnel in and you narrow down that these trees violate some covenant or condition, which you're going to research in the covenants and conditions, or it's prohibited, or you don't have the power to decide this under the covenants and conditions. And what does work is you have an arborist. Maybe you can have an arborist that proves this is dangerous or they're going to fall down. Those things do work. What doesn't work is you go, I don't like these trees. That doesn't work.
Well, and another part of this, Joe, also is that when you're dealing with it, if the arborist comes in and says, hey, everything's fine, but they have to be maintained, you know, it stands there on your property again, you might be wanting to look at the HOA if they're not going to let you remove them, say, okay, who's going to pay to maintain these? And by the way, which ones of you, and is the arborist going to give you an indemnification and hold harmless that if in the event they're wrong and it does damage property or person, the arborist will be responsible.
Exactly.
Because, you know, once again, you have this dual duty. One is to maintain the property, and the other one is to comply with HOA requirements. So
that makes perfect sense.
You know, you might look and say, okay, you guys want to take all this responsibility? You guys want to pay all this money? Because that may be something you don't want to do.
Hey, Joe, can you give us a follow-up call later after some of this sorts out? We'd like to know what the result is. And if you need our help in between, all you have to do is give us a call. Fair enough?
Fair enough, gentlemen. Thanks for all your information and advice.
You're welcome. Thank you for calling the Bell and Pollock Legal Show. Gary Bell, Brad Pollock. This is a legal show. It's our Law Talk show. Don't forget about our show on KOA every Saturday morning, 10 o'clock. It's a one-hour injury show. And today we're talking about how you lay the foundation to submit a personal injury claim, how the insurance company attacks you as the injured victim. 1 hour, don't miss that show. We'll be right back. Bell and Pollock Legal Show, Gary Bell, Brad Pollock. We're ready for you. And right now we're ready to talk to Eric from Catlin's. Good morning, Eric.
Good morning. How are you guys doing today?
Good. What's cooking?
We got some new specials to start off the new year with. We're going to start with that breakfast special. Now we're running corned beef hash. Corned beef hash can be substituted for our regular hash browns on any one egg or two egg plate. That's just a dollar substitute more. As always, you can get toast tortilla or pancakes with those egg plates. As always, I recommend those buttermilk scratch-made pancakes. They're out of this world. And then that lunch special is going to be what we're calling the South of the Border burger. We're going to load that up with bacon, sharp cheddar cheese, Hatch green chilies, load that up with some lettuce and tomatoes. You can get our homemade chips or our waffle-cut fries on that. Both of those are really, really good on the side. Either one of them you can't go wrong with. Those are going to be the specials for the next couple of weeks. And as always, every week from Monday and Friday from 11 to 2, every Monday and every Friday, we do an all-you-can-eat taco and burrito buffet. It is all-you-can-eat. It's only $8.45 in the price, and that actually includes a non-alcoholic beverage in that price. Simply can't beat that anywhere in town that I'm aware of. We've got crafts of mimosas ready for $12.50. We've got flat screens on. I think we're going to get umbrellas up and have a wonderful, super nice warm day here in Colorado. According to the rest of the country, we're beating the odds there. So we're going to have our umbrellas up. We're going to have the deck open. Come on down. Bring your dog. Bring your kids. Come and watch some sports. Come and get some great food and have a great time at Caitlin's Restaurant, you guys.
Okay, Eric, where are you located?
We are 4379 East Mississippi Avenue. Now, that's one block east of Colorado Boulevard, and that is the Glendale Shopping Center. Come and check us out, guys.
I'll be there, Eric.
Hey, great. Thank you, guys.
Take care.
All right.
Buddy. Thanks.
You're welcome. Thanks a lot. We appreciate it. Okay, right now we're going to talk to Larry. Good morning, Larry. What can we do for you?
Good morning. I have a question about a friend of mine who passed away this week without a will, and her only surviving relative was her brother, and how do we get him appointed personal representative?
Okay, first off, when you die without a will, it's called intestate succession. Fancy legal words mean you had no will. When you die with a will, it's called testate succession. So intestate succession says, and the only heir is the brother, did you say?
Yes.
Okay, so what you do is you're going to file a petition, which we can point you in the right direction and help you, but you're going to file a petition for appointment in the probate court of whatever county they live in. And you're going to allege and state in the petition that so-and-so passed away, date of death, etc. Fill out the petition. It's like a form. And you're going to say there was no will. And you're going to then that defaults to the statute. When you default to the statute, then the court knows that there are certain people that have priority. And they're going to be looking. The court's going to look to see who's next in line. And if there's only one person next in line, the court's question then is you comport and comply with the statute. And there you go.
And you know, there's forms for that that he can get off the website. But if he needs help, he can just give us a call, Larry, and we'll get the forms for him. And if he needs help filling them out, there's an instruction booklet that goes with it. We can show him exactly what he needs to do.
Okay, do we just go simply to the county clerk's website and pull off the forms?
Yeah, well, actually, go to the Colorado Judicial Branch. And, you know, if he gives me a call, I can help him out. You just let me know, and I'll get him in the right direction right away.
Okay.
To get him the right forms that he can start immediately as a personal representative. And he's You know, he can do it in a number of different counties, but he can do it in the county where the death occurred, or he can do it in the county where the assets are located. That's two counties I would suggest.
But you do
they're all the same counties, so okay. That makes it easy.
Yeah, right, but you do fill out the form, and the major question for the court when they look at the petition is going to be, is this person the only heir? And what shows me, the court, that issue? How does that get proved? And so probably the petition, you'll fill it out and say that this is the only living surviving heir. Because under the testate succession, it is a little bit complicated as when there's no will, because it defaults to certain levels. Like, it would default from one spouse to the other. Then if both spouses are passed away, then it would default to the children. And or is there more than one children? So that's the critical issue there.
Yeah, and so the husband's been dead for a long time, and there never were children. So the only survivor is the brother. So it's really pretty simple.
Right, and that it will be very simple. And we can get him through it very quickly. The other thing we'd like to talk to him about is the size of the estate. He may not have to go through much to get it taken care of.
Oh, it's very small. Oh. It's probably under $100,000.
Well, then we want to talk to him. You know, make sure he calls and tells us that, you know, especially a referral from you. We're talking to Larry, the Larry and Barry show, for everybody to know. But we're happy to talk to him and see if we can't keep it as efficient and as minor expense as possible, so the proceedings don't eat up what's left of the estate.
You know, another corollary point is, I think everybody should understand and know, and any good estate attorney will say, if you got a smaller estate, you don't want all these formal things like formal probate and formal this. You want informal probate. You want no bond. And if there's just one heir, then this is easier and easier. If it's a smaller estate, it becomes easier and easier, because you don't want a lot of convoluted, expensive baggage attached to an estate just because you had a fancy will or something like that. No will here. But a small estate, you need to do it the very cheapest way.
Great. I appreciate it, gentlemen. As always, you're a great help.
We'll get the forms for him. We'll help him out. Just tell him to give us a call.
Thanks, Larry. Thanks. And as long as we got you here, don't forget about the Larry and Barry show that follows our show, Consumer Real Estate Show.
We're going to see you in about 20 minutes, buddy.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll look forward to it.
All right.
Okay,
thanks for the call.
Okay.
We appreciate it. The Bell and Pollock Legal Show. You can call us at 303-713-8255, and we'll be glad to answer your questions and solve your problems today. Right now, if you want any of our books, we have 6 books. Our latest one is Colorado Car Insurance Essential Guideline. Point your legal compass to true north before an accident happens, and that's what this book is all about. You can get a hard copy if you call us and tell us. We'll send you a hard copy. You know, when you submit an injury claim, you're in an accident. This is no ordinary day or event for you, but for the insurance company, it is an ordinary day or event for them. They are well-trained, highly trained. They know what to say and what to do. They know what forms to do, what forms to ask you to sign. You shouldn't just sign forms. You shouldn't just give statements. You need to know what you're doing. You need to have a legal game plan. But I tell you what, in our show today on KOA at 10 o'clock in the morning, 1 hour show, does anybody, let me ask you a question. You've been going to the doctor maybe 5 years, 10 years, maybe 30 years, maybe 50 years. Do you know what your medical records say? Do you know what's in your medical records? Probably not. I probably don't know what's in my medical records. I went to the doctor. I know what I think happened. But when you get these records in, that's what happens in an injury case. The insurance company gets your records. And then we show you how they dissect your medical records. We show you how they attack this. We show you and tell you about pre-existing conditions. We had a back problem before, but that was 10 years ago. Haven't had any problem or any symptoms for 10 years. Now, boom, hit, rear-ended. Now you got major back problems. So, Brad, let's just give them a little flavor of what we do in our KOA show. You got a back problem 10 years ago. You were out in the yard, working in the yard. You leaned over. You strained your back. You went to the doctor. You said, my low back hurts. One time, they gave you a prescription medication 10 years ago. Now you're in a major rear-end crash, and the insurance company says, well, your back was already bad because you had a bad back 10 years ago. And you say, I had symptoms for 10 years.
Well, you know, rodeo doc is probably going crazy about now.
He probably is.
But everybody knows, Gary, it's automatic. The crash had nothing to do with it, and it was all caused by...
Well, when you say that, that's what the insurance company says. Yeah, the crash had nothing to do. I mean, you got hit by 45 miles an hour. That wasn't your problem. The problem was you were picking, you were planting flowers 10 years ago and you hurt your back 10 years ago.
Everybody knows that. I mean, that's just common knowledge, isn't it? Because we can't, when you're dealing with an insurance company and the question is to what kind of money they're going to pay you for a crash that's occurred, the one thing the insurance company is going to do is try and find an alternate form of responsibility in any way, shape, or form it can. And it's going to hope it can get the public and the juries to believe it. And that, you know, don't cut short the ability of them to find doctors and make sure they have doctors who are going to testify in their favor. Normally we find those doctors getting somewhere between $500,000 to $1 million or more dollars per year from the insurance company to give these opinions. And they're going to be out there saying that, you know, that this was caused by a previous accident or this was caused by a previous event. Even if you didn't have symptoms, it was a latent problem that was just sitting there. Your body was degenerated. Your body was in that form, and you should have, and it was just a matter of anything triggering it. So our car accident shouldn't be responsible.
And that's one of the ways they do it. And we delve into this in detail. If you want to know more about this, listen to our KOA show at 10 o'clock to 11 o'clock every Saturday morning. That's 8:50 a.m. We cover these things in detail. Most people don't understand these insurance companies have their own doctors. Brad just referenced it. Under certain circumstances, when you have an injury claim, and you can win this war, under certain circumstances, you have to go to the insurance company's doctor, a stranger. You never heard of them. These people don't have an agenda for you. They have an agenda for the insurance company. As Brad just said, some of them get paid $500,000 to $1 million or more a year per insurance company. Some of them, that's all they do is examine injured people. And they come up with these opinions. But you need to understand the playing field. You need to understand how to navigate the insurance maze. So you're going to get a copy of our book called Legal Game Plan because you need one. In order to implement a legal game plan, you must first have one. Makes sense? And you need to learn how to navigate the insurance maze. You're not going to go get in your car and navigate. You hope your navigation system works and gets you from point A to point B where you want to go. Same thing with a legal game plan. 303-713-8255. The Bell and Pollock Legal Show, the only show of its kind. We'll be right back. Here we go. Bell and Pollock Legal Show, Gary Bell, Brad Pollock. We have offices in Greenwood Village, Denver, Steamboat Springs, and we do injury cases all over this state, and we have for years. You know, before we get to the callers, I got to tell you one more thing that we cover in our KOA show is these insurance companies look for any reason to blame your injuries on something else other than this 45-mile-an-hour rear-end car crash that sent you to the emergency room. Anything else. One of their favorites is they ask you, you know, are you emotionally distressed? Yes, I have flashbacks. Yes, I can't get this thing out of my mind. Yes, I'm depressed because I haven't been able to work for 6 months. Well, let's see your counseling records. Oh, in your counseling records, you had a nasty divorce. That must be your problem. In your counseling records, you told your counselor that you had a bad childhood. That must be your problem. It's not this 45-mile-an-hour rear-end slam sends you to the emergency room and treatment with doctors. That's not the cause. The cause is your counseling records, right? Right? Join us live right now is Joe from Littleton. Good morning, Joe.
Morning. I misspoke. My name's Anthony, and I'm calling on behalf of a friend named Joe.
Oh, Anthony. We'll help you, Anthony.
I'm just trying to get information for my friend. He was in a single car accident on the highway along I-70.
Okay.
No drugs, no alcohol, and he hit a column on the highway.
All right.
Intentionally, and he's getting some help with that, and I'm trying to help him. I don't know if he needs to talk to an attorney or not. His injuries were minimal, thank God. And he is seeking out some counseling for this situation. So
right.
It's a decision to intentionally drive his car into something.
Okay,
I'm grateful he's very okay.
I'm sorry that this all happened. It sounds like you're distressed in your voice, so I'm very sorry. But so one car accident, and does he have health insurance any way to pay the medical bills? The
yes.
Okay.
Have not seen. I'm going to help him tomorrow. Have not seen the police report. All he has is a traffic ticket for careless driving.
Was there damage?
There was nothing about property damage, and that's kind of where he's getting concerned.
Yeah, was there property damage at all? Do you know?
I don't know. Okay. I haven't seen the scene as long as 70 near Wadsworth area. I don't know.
Anthony, he definitely needs to talk to a lawyer.
Yes.
And we're happy to talk to him and get him on the right direction. We need to talk to him, or we can talk to you off the air about him and figure out what's going on. Let's get a look at the ticket. If he's going to be, you said it was at I-70 in Aurora?
Near Golden.
Okay, on Golden.
Underneath the viaduct at CR-58, it's called.
So if he's going to Jefferson County or Golden or Arvada, wherever it might be.
Wheat Ridge.
Yeah, we need to take a look at it and see what's going on. There may be some responsibility. It sounds like he's probably insured. There may be some responsibility, but insurance probably isn't going to cover an intentional act. So he's going to have some problems.
Let's clarify that, because if he has MedPay on his car insurance policy, and he probably does, it's mandatory $5,000 unless you reject it in writing, which you're never going to do. So MedPay, that pays your medical bills regardless of fault. Doesn't matter about fault. Doesn't matter how it happened. So that's number one.
He has MedPay or not. I think he may have declined it.
Okay, if he does, then you default to the health insurance, and they pay for the treatment, so that's being handled there. One thing that concerns me is I have seen the state of Colorado before in court ask for and receive compensation for damage to state property, guardrails. I've seen it with guardrails. I've seen it with stop signs.
Right.
And people don't understand that. They just think it's part of the deal. Well, no, when you damage it, it's in play. So that needs to be discovered.
Kind of my thought, and that's why I was kind of helping him process. So on his behalf, I just made a call. So.
Let's get your number off the air, and we'll talk to you. We'll have one of our lawyers talk to you and see if we can't get Joe to also talk to us and discuss it and see what we can do to help him out. All right?
Of course.
It'd be our pleasure.
Anthony, thank you for the call, sir.
Very good. I'll hang on.
Okay, I'm going to put you on hold. The Bell and Pollock Legal Show. Don't forget about our show on KOA every Saturday morning, 10 to 11 o'clock. It's a one-hour injury show. Today we're talking about how insurance companies attack your case, how you prove causation, how they attack causation. You say, I was rear-ended. I was sitting at a stoplight, and boom, I got hit, and now I have all these symptoms. So certainly, some insurance companies should be fair to me. That's a myth. Certainly, they're going to give me fair compensation. That's a myth. And read our books. We tell you all the myths in there. And also, certainly, they're not going to blame my injuries on anything else because all my symptoms occurred right at the same time. And they're going to attack causation. Right now, join us live is Bob from Aurora. Good morning, Bob. What can we do for you?
Good morning, gentlemen. I'm wondering, a small claims court in Denver, a default judgment was granted, and trying to serve interrogatories, the guy seems to be dodging. My question is, how long does signed judgment for interrogatories, does it expire?
A judgment from small claims court?
Yes.
How long have you been trying?
I've been trying for 2 weeks now to serve him on the interrogatories.
Oh, no, you got plenty of time.
Right.
Oh, really?
Yeah, plenty of time. But, what are you trying to, you say you want to serve in the interrogatories. Didn't he have to, you said it was a default judgment. I'm sorry.
Yes.
Okay, so he wasn't there at the time.
Correct.
Okay. Well, we can get you a process server to help find him, or we can get you somebody to find him to make sure you're going to be able to get your money.
Okay. Yeah, I already have a process server, and he can't. The house where he was at, where he served him initially, he can't find him now, or no one's answering the door.
We can talk about who your process server is and what it's going to take to be able to get the interrogatories on him. Here's the concern I've got. You know, the interrogatories are the next step to eventually getting a warrant for his arrest, because interrogatories are a court order that he has to answer these questions.
Yes.
But the guy's not going to answer them. You realize that?
Yes, and then he's in contempt. So I have the time. I'll take the time. The warrant, if goes out for his arrest, then, you know, he'll suffer the consequences of that.
You got the right approach, okay? Absolutely. Because you got the judgment, the default judgment. He didn't show up. You get him served. You got to look and look and look and try and try, get him served. When he doesn't respond, then you can bring it to the court's attention and request a warrant for his arrest.
Okay.
So what I want to do is talk to you off the air and make sure your investigator is doing everything they can to find him. But we'll help you. We'll help you find this guy.
Okay.
And get you into some other avenues. You've got a process server trying to find him. You may need an investigator.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking next.
And you know, an investigator can go down there and do some stuff to find this guy.
But the other thing, Bob, don't worry about your judgment. When the default judgment entered, that's a regular judgment. A judgment exists in Colorado. It doesn't just go away in a couple of weeks. I mean, the general rule in judgments is they're good for 18 years, and then they can be revived.
Yeah.
Don't worry about that part of it. What you just worry about what you're doing right now, and you're doing a good job.
Okay.
And let's flush him out, too. There's some places you can record that judgment that's going to be against his record, so it may make him want to come to the forefront.
Great.
All right.
Thank you,
so let us get your number. We'll give you a call.
I'm going to put you on hold.
All right.
Thanks for the call.
Thank you.
All right, the Bell and Pollock Legal Show, Gary Bell, Brad Pollock, our KOA show, 10 o'clock to 11 o'clock every Saturday morning. That's 8:50 a.m., a one-hour injury show, and we get down to the very minute details. How do you navigate the insurance maze when you have an injury claim? What is an injury claim? How do you submit an injury claim? How does an insurance company try to blame you when you are rear-ended at 45 miles an hour? How does that happen? Listen to the show, 10 o'clock to 11 o'clock, 8:50 a.m. Our website, championsofthepeople.com, because we are your champions of the people.